going to start off with trying to find out what is your favorite Grand Slam.
Gotcha. Are we answering at the same time? Yeah, or?
Usually just... Australia
hands. First.
Yeah, Australia hands down.
Both of you is Australia?
Yeah.
Okay. Surprise, okay. Federer or Nadal?
I'm going to go with Djokovic.
I was going to say, or Novak.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a Roger fan for so long. I'm just going to stick with that. I mean, I've never seen someone that made tennis look so easy. So I'm Roger all the way.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a very important question. Very, very important. Jay-Z or Nas?
I'm a Drake fan.
Jay-Z just slaughtered Nas on it. But I think Nas got in with the ether, but I thought Jay-Z overall, full body of work, Jay-Z.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Jay-Z for the purposes of the question, but if we're talking GOAT, I'm a Drake stan.
Wow, wait, you'll put Drake over Jay-Z as a GOAT?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm loving it.
Give him, please.
Okay. All right. So, basketball or, as you guys call it, soccer?
Basketball.
I'm going basketball. Actually, I prefer football over basketball, bro.
To be fair,
American football.
That's what I was going to say. NFL or NBA. That's what I really should have said.
Okay. NBA.
Yeah, NFL.
I grew up playing basketball. Mike Jordan was a big hero for me. So.
And what teams do you guys like follow or support, if any?
I mean, so we're from Atlanta, so the Hawks for the basketball and the Atlanta Falcons for football.
Okay, keeping ATL.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, I totally just lost you on my screen. One second. Yeah, so I think nowadays it's hard to follow teams just because they switch teams so often. So now I follow
teams. Yeah, because that's what I say. I say I follow players, not teams so much. So,
yeah. What, you're like a LeBron fan?
Exactly, LeBron, Westbrook. So I'm loving the Lakers right now.
Was that a shot fired?
I was going to say, Drew, is there an issue there? Or?
I don't know. I feel like there's so many people who cheer for the Lakers who are not from LA, or you know how like you meet Dallas Cowboys fans who've never been to Dallas.
America's
because
team.
Because they're America's team, yeah.
Yeah. No, fair.
I just assume everyone is either you're a LeBron fan or you're a LeBron hater. So,
please don't say you're a LeBron hater.
No, I'm a fan.
Okay, that was a trick. Okay.
Yeah. No, but I respect him more so off the court than on. I think he's a little bit more of a crybaby on the court, but what he's doing off the court, I have a lot of respect for.
I respect that.
Yeah.
What about weights or cardio?
So I incorporate
my guys weights all the way.
I incorporate my cardio with my weight, so I'm gonna go weights over cardio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great question though.
I prefer cardio over weights.
Okay.
Yeah, every time I get to a certain amount, every time I get like over 175, my knees start hurting, so I can't.
Fair enough. Okay. And lastly, home food or dining out?
Home food for me. I love a good southern cooked meal.
Yeah, I'm going dining now. I love a good ambiance, great food, great music in the background, and then chilling with Jordan, my fiance. Can't beat that.
Well, what kind of cuisine? Sorry, Lucy. What kind of cuisine are we going for?
Asian fusion is my favorite.
Okay. And Jermaine,
either Asian fusion or a good steakhouse?
For me, I think it's just more home cooking. You know, I like food cooked with love, patience, dedication, all that good stuff.
Are you nice in the kitchen yourself? Or?
You know what? I've got a couple dishes, but I wouldn't call myself nice.
Okay, so you can help yourself then, basically.
I could scramble some eggs.
fair play.
Good.
Jameer, what about you? Are you handy in the kitchen or not so much?
No, I am not. But I think at the end of the day, cooking is reading directions. So I wouldn't say that I'm bad at cooking.
See, that's offensive. You know, so I feel like we live in two different worlds. If you say cooking is reading directions, like I feel like, you know, mom didn't cook.
Right. Well, I'm saying if you ask me, can I cook? I would say yes because I can read.
That's not true. That's an art. Cooking is an art.
Right. Right. At a certain level, you're adding your own little personality to the food. But I'm saying at the basic level. Add 2 teaspoons of this. Okay,
that's what you want to put out into the world.
It's really the instruction.
I'm saying at the basic foundational level, you're reading directions to cook the food. That's all I'm saying.
Well, let you tell it. Everybody can cook. Okay, all right.
everybody that can read can cook.
I disagree, but we'll move on.
No, I hear that. I hear both your arguments. So I'll just leave it. I'll leave it there. So like if you can get into like some more like I guess grittier questions, so like, and yeah, maybe Jermaine, you can go first, being the older brother. Your earliest memories of tennis, and like who inspired you to pick up a racket?
Okay, so my dad was very instrumental in the beginning of our tennis. He started off as an ALTA player, which is an adult league in Atlanta, and he basically just love the game, love the sport. He started out our older brother, Jackie, who I'm not sure if you're familiar with, but he got a full scholarship to go to Northwestern University. And so for me, my older brother was more so my hero in tennis, and he kind of set the standard and set the stage, you know, by getting the D1 scholarship. So that was kind of the standard for us playing tennis.
How many years older was your older brother? Sorry.
My older brother, I want to say he is 4 years older than me.
Okay.
Yeah. So and you talking numbers?
I mean,
he is 40. Yeah, he's 40 years old.
Okay. And Jameer, for you?
It was pretty much just following in Jermaine and Jackie's footsteps. Whenever they would go out and play a tournament, I would just, you know, ride along and kind of beg people to hit with me whenever anyone needed a warm up for a match, or if I saw a wall and hit against it. And it was that, and then just trying to outdo whatever they did. So, you know, if Jermaine went and played a tournament and he got to the finals or won it or whatever, I would just try and one up him every time. So it was pretty much just chasing him and following in his footsteps and trying to outcompete him.
And I'm guessing like you both pretty much knew like from an early age that you kind of wanted to have a career in tennis, like in some capacity. Like
I knew I wanted to play. I never thought I'd be where I am now. I never like say, you know, when I grow up, I want to be the hitting partner for Serena or even a coach. But I knew that our passion and how competitive we are and how competitive we grew up with each other, I knew that it was going to lead to something. We never really give a title to it.
Yeah,
I would echo what Jameer said. I think for me, it definitely did not start that way for me because I played multiple sports. I played AAU baseball and basketball.
Wow.
And I think I really got serious with tennis at age 14. And like I said, it was the standard, you know, my brother had set such a high standard that, you know, whatever we did, it was going to be either D1 or pro. So when I took it serious, then it was kind of like the bar is already set.
Yeah. And you both touched on it a bit there. You both played college tennis as well. Like, yes. what was that experience like? Cause you both went to D1 schools.
Yeah, like for me, it was at first because, you know, back when I went to college, I think that it was a little bit more of a disappointment, to be honest. You know, like, you know, there weren't many guys transitioning from college to pro, you know. And once I got to college, I mean, I had a phenomenal experience because I felt like I got recruited by most of my friends already. So it was more of a great transition, and for me it was the transition from just basically becoming a teenager to an adult, you know. So had a great experience in college.
Yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it was similar thing. Like, you know, we always grew up with this ideal that we were gonna be professionals. You know, we wanted to, you know, be 18 years old competing in Grand Slams. So when it came time for that decision to go to college, it was almost like a letdown, you know, like, oh, I think, you know, I in my mind, I'm supposed to be there, but you know, really I'm here. But for me, I had so much growing up to do in college, and I think that was the best part about my 4 years. It was such a learning process for me and just becoming a more well-rounded person. So college actually allowed for me to go back and, you know, be a kid again, because I felt like I spent so much time being an adult, being traveling the world by myself, you know, and I never just had that time to, you know, have friends outside of tennis, do other things other than tennis. You know, I would lose tennis matches and, you know, go lock myself up in the room for like 6 days. And it just wasn't healthy. So college just provided that experience for me to just be a normal human being. So, which I really appreciated and what I got out of the process.
Because you played on the pro circuit as well for a while. Like
So I played on the pro circuit a little bit before and obviously the 4 years after college.
Yeah. How was that as well? Like in terms of being on the pro circuit, like, I guess you kind of touched on it a bit there, like basically tennis is your life pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be if you want to be successful at it. You know, you have to eat, sleep, breathe it to a certain extent. If you want to, you know, reach that next level. And it's interesting seeing what Serena or seeing how it's done at the highest level, because now I look back and you know, I see all the stuff and I saw what I did, and it's just nowhere near the right way to do it. Like, it's impossible to do it by yourself. And I was just like, nah, no wonder why I wasn't happy. But I mean, there were some good parts, some ups and downs.
Sorry to cut you. You reached like top 200.
Right. I reached top 200, but the goal was always, you know, higher than that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously that's good and great for a lot of people, but I don't necessarily consider it a success story. With that being said, the overall experiences, it was great. I mean, tennis has opened doors to a lot of relationships, a lot of great networks, great people that I've met, a lot of countries that I've got to travel to. So, I mean, all in all, especially, you know, from where we started off to where we are now, it was an unbelievable experience.
No, that's well said. So, yeah, if we kind of get a bit more like personal now. So with you, Jermaine, I want to talk about the experience you had, because obviously you worked with Venus Williams, right. And you were her hitting partner, or you were part of her team. So if you can talk a bit about like how that relationship kind of came about and like came into fruition pretty much.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would have to date back to 2014. Actually when, I was fortunate enough that Jameer, had me join his team, and I was kind of, you know, his support guy. So if we go back to 2014 French Open, we were
also playing great tennis back then.
yeah, I think it was around 2014-15, maybe 2015. Jameer brought me to French Open, and I just remember going into the gym and I met Venus Williams and David Witt. So that was my first introduction to Venus. And you know, she was just an amazing person. And, you know, it was a nice meeting. And fast forward to, I would say, 2016, I had the opportunity to just go down to West Palm and play some golf with a buddy who was the former hitting partner for Serena at the time. And I think it came up, I ran into Venus again, and she asked me if I wanted to practice. I practiced with her one day, which turned into 2 weeks of training before the US Open. And I think that's when I went to the U.S. Open with you, Jameer, that year as well. So I think you lost on the third qualifying round, not to remind you. But then after that, I was around New York and I was like, you know what? Like, let me just shoot my shot. I'll just send Venus a text like, hey, you know, I'm in New York. Let me know if you need anything. Let me know if I could be of service to you anyway. And I just remember thinking nothing of it. Like, hey, I'll just shoot my shot. Next day, I get a text message from David Witt saying like, hey, I think she called me Jenkins at that time. She was like, hey, is this Jenkins? You know, you're going to hit with Venus this week, you know, practices at, you know, it was very distant, kind of like, hey, practice will be at like 10 o'clock, you know, see you soon. And just that one little, I think, opportunity kind of led to the next, and the rest was kind of history.
Fantastic. So like, if you can talk us through like a typical day, obviously now you're part of the team, I should say. Like, first in training, like, so pre-tournament, for instance, like, and then an event? Like, is there a difference in terms of, like, I guess, intensity when training, or is it like the same throughout?
No, I think there is a little bit difference, just in the sense of sometimes it could be a little bit like Groundhog Day when you're training at home, you know, you're really not in that environment. But I think one thing that Venus and Serena are really great at is just creating that environment and practice, you know, and so kind of having that same edge or chip on their shoulder as they would, you know, at a tournament. But definitely when you're in the environment at the tournament, you know, you move differently, you know, it's like everyone's kind of like, you know, your guards are up, you know, you're kind of sizing each other up. So, you know, kind of like, you know, if you're going to be in a like a fighter's mentality. So at tournaments, you know, that's when you start seeing, I can speak for Venus, you know, where she's really focusing on getting sharper and sharper, but the practice time kind of goes down. She's not, she doesn't like to practice that long, too long. So she likes to really conserve it for the matches.
Because a lot of players don't have like the luxury of having like a hitting partner, like kind of traveling with them, like on their team. Like, would you say it's an essential kind of part of anyone's team or player's team if they could have that kind of access?
Jameer, I'll let you speak on this, but what I will say, I think it depends on the person and the individual, you know, because I wouldn't say.
No, I mean, it's the girls don't like each other. Yeah, at the end of the day, that's what it is. You see in some tournaments, certain guys are going to play against each other, and you'll see them warming up with each other. You'll never see that on the women's side. So that, I mean, that's kind of where this whole hitting partner came from. The girls will play a match with each other, and something will happen. They won't talk to each other for years. Whereas, you know, if something happened with the guys, they settle in the locker room. They go about their day. It's just the girls, there's more grudge feelings there.
But I would say overall, though, not all the girls are like that.
Obviously, not all the girls, but I think, you know, the girls are a little bit more guarded with their training.
No, I think I'll agree a little bit, because now that you said it, now I'm thinking about it. And I'm thinking about, you know, all the posts from like other tennis outlets showing that, oh, these two players practice and stuff. You don't really pick from.
Right. And it's like with the men. Exactly. You'll see little clicks where, you know, girls will practice it with each other, but normally you'll see that consistently. The same girls will practice with each other. Yeah. You'll hardly ever see, especially at the top level, you know, people going out of their way to train with new people. So it's just, whereas the guys, you know, they don't care. They have one agenda. They just want to, you know, go into the match feeling good.
Yeah. Do you, as back to you, Jermaine, do you kind of have like input in terms of giving advice to, like, so when you were with Venus, for instance, would you like give her maybe advice, or would you just leave that purely to the coach?
Yeah. So I think starting out, you know, you're still trying to prove yourself. So I think you have to build that relationship. So for me, I was fortunate enough to have a preseason with Venus back in 2016, where, you know, she could only, I was in West Palm and I would train with her. I would do her fitness and I would do her tennis. And so I went through kind of a whole like preseason with her where, you know, it's just like day to day. It's kind of like a boot camp, you know, you're doing the same thing day by day. And so we kind of, I would say we're in the court, like the trenches together, you know? And so then when you get out in the field, like in 2017, that was kind of like the year that we were all firing on the same engines. You know, I was a big part of like her team during preseason. So when we got out on the road, then we met her coach, David Witt. So now it's kind of like, for me, I already had the cadence of, you know, and had the posture of, you know, hey, I will go to Dave, always channeling things through Dave, because he was the voice, saying, hey, you know, I think maybe, you know, her ball needs more weight behind it, or I would just kind of tell him, and then, you know, he would kind of tell her. But definitely it didn't start that way for me. It was more of like, hey, I'm just trying to put the ball in the court to keep my job, you know.
I didn't know you were actually training her as well, as in like physically training.
Because I think she was going through something like a elbow. I think she had like an elbow injury or something, just during PRP treatment, if I'm saying that right. And I think we did like 2 or 3 fitness sessions a day. She couldn't even hit a ball for like 2 weeks. So
Wow.
Yeah.
Tough. And yeah, now talking about like your coaching role. So I guess your first official coaching role was with Noemi Osag, who was the then world number one. Yeah. Like how did that kind of come about basically? Because I remember posting about that, and me personally, I was very excited to see that. But yeah, how did that kind of come about basically, that relationship? How did that start?
Yeah, definitely a great question. For me, I had no ambitions of being a coach of world number one. Like I was completely happy working at USTA, and just from a work-life balance as well, I went from traveling, I would say, 30 plus weeks out of the year to now, I get to, spend holidays at home and start focusing on the family. And so when that opportunity came about, I just felt like, it was definitely too good to turn down, like I immediately went to, I think my boss, Kathy Rinaldi, and I went to the directors and was like, hey, I'm thinking about taking this opportunity. Just wanted to let you guys know before you hear from someone else. So, and then, just it's a challenge, I think it's an added challenge because you're coaching a number one, you're changing roles. You're going from a hidden partner to a coach. Now everything you do is completely amplified. I wouldn't say the stage was different, but are bigger or anything, but I would say that everything was amplified. Like the spotlight was amplified, amplified. So.
And then you also, the accountability changes. Oh, everything is on you. Yeah.
Accountability. Yeah, I mean, one memorable moment was, and I still laugh about this to this day, is I was at Wimbledon, and I just remember there's this, if you go to Wimbledon near Arangi, there's this, green space where, all the athletes kind of warm up. And I just remember walking past Kamal Murray, and he looked at me, and he was like, the hot seat's different, isn't it? We both just started laughing. I was like, yeah, I get it.
Who reached out to you as well from the Sarkis team? Was it like, because I know her dad is quite, well, he has quite a lot of say in her career, but was it like her management? Like who was it that reached out to you?
It was really tricky because I was actually at USTA working with Coco Gauff. At the time.
Which you're going to talk about in a bit, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and so Corey Gauff, who was a big mentor of mine because we date back to when they lived in Atlanta, he would bring Coco out sometimes at the park that I would work at. And he was always just a mentor, just talking to me about the transition, from college and now to the corporate world because he was, I think, VP of his company at the time. And so we kind of had that relationship. And then when the opportunity came about, I believe Stewart at the time was looking to recruit Coco Gauff, who is Naomi's agent. And so I think somewhere along the lines, Corey kind of found out that, hey, I was interested in the job. So he was like, hey, if you want it, I know Stewart. I can talk to Stewart, put in a good word for you. So I would say he was very instrumental in, kind of handing that off or making that happen.
And you kind of, again, Coco Gauff. So you kind of touched on it there in terms of saying how Corey, her father, was like a mentor to you. So what age were you working with Coco? Was that when she was like 14, 15?
I wouldn't say that I would work with her. Like she would just come out sometimes and it was literally like a hit and miss, like maybe two or three times. Like she came out to in Atlanta.
How old is she at the time?
I think she was like 9 or 10 years old.
Oh, wow. At the time. So were you able to see like from that early as well, like how special she was, I guess?
She always had this look in her eyes. Like she was just like a silent killer. Yeah.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, she played multiple sports, so she kind of had the swagger of a basketball player, the grace of like a like a track runner, and she had the the toughness of a football player. She's just like a
And she had her dad behind her, man. She had her dad. Mr. Gauff don't play.
I
Like, but no, in a good way though. Like he literally believes she's untouchable and she's invincible. And like when you have somebody telling you that in your ear since from a young age, it's just like you start to believe it. I'll never forget Serena and I were talking one time, and I was just like, you know, because our goal has always been to win a Grand Slam. And if I would have won a Grand Slam, I would have been going crazy, partying and all that stuff. So I was like, hey, Ez, like, what did you do when you won your first Grand Slam? And she was just like, you know, I just had some dinner, went to go see a movie, went to sleep. And I was just like, that's crazy to think of. And she was, but she said, she was just like, from the time we were 4 years old, we've always been, you know, been told that we were going to be Grand Slam champions, that we're going to be in the best in the world. So when I won my first Grand Slam, it wasn't anything abnormal to us because, you know, we've been told our whole lives that we were going to do this. So she was just like, she was just chilling. If anything, she was just like, I got 23 more to win.
It's a great, great segue there too, because I want to talk about King Richard film as well. Like, obviously you guys, you would have seen it. We've all seen it now, but the story, You both having worked with the sisters, you're more than familiar with the story. But did you think the film kind of encapsulated everything that kind of there was to tell? Because obviously it was focusing mainly on Richard.
There's so much to tell. It's going to be impossible to put it in a 2.5-hour film. You know, there's so much left out of the story. I mean, even the story itself focuses on more so, you know, Mr. Richard and Venus. And then there's this whole other side, Serena, her sisters, her mom. You know, there's so much that goes into the Venus and Serena story that you can't even tell. I mean, it would be better if the next one's in like a TV series or something that lasts for like 8 seasons.
Yeah.
That's
a great shout. And then Jermaine, what were your thoughts like on the film as well? Just quickly before we move on.
No, I thought it gave me a glimpse into, you know, some new things, like as far as the challenges for him, you know, going like basically being in the hood and trying to coach. And I didn't know he got beat up that many times.
Yeah,
I think that was more for the movies. I don't think he got beat up.
Yeah, I was like, man, I didn't know that, you know.
Yeah.
But
for me, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
No, go ahead. I think I was about to touch on something else. I'll say it after you.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I definitely was glad they gave Mr. Williams his flowers, because my personal experience of Mr. Williams is I really respected how much respect Venus gave him when he would show up at practice. And, you know, just the amount of respect, you know, just till this day, you know. So, but no, I thought the film was, they did a great job, but it's just so much more to tell.
I was going to say that for me, it was a great experience to sit and watch the film, to see it through another father's and daughter, like another Black family growing up playing tennis's perspective. Because, I mean, we obviously have our own experience growing up with our dad taking us out to the tennis court and telling us all these things. And it was just really cool to see another family's go through that process. And also, like Jermaine was saying about Mr. Richards, another cool story when Serena and I were practicing, Mr. Richards, he was out there with us, and he told us to do this drill, and it was like something crazy that he said that Serena and I were like, we tried to do it at first, and we were just like, this drill doesn't make sense at all. And then she was just like, you know, just go all in, just go for it, and let's see what happens. And we start doing this drill, and I wish I remember what he told us to do. But when we like bought into it, it was the most genius drill on the planet. Oh, wow. And it fixed whatever problem she had at the time, it completely fixed it. So the dude, he sees the game a different way for sure.
No, that's incredible. That's
like you said, and then obviously he harped on that open stance.
Of course, famous open stance. But back to you, Jermaine, actually, quickly. Again, you touched on it about the USTA and your kind of role before taking on the role with Osaka. So I believe, are you currently a player development coach? Is that your current role or?
Right. So player development, specifically, I work in the transitional space, transitional junior space, which is a pretty sensitive space. I would say it's probably one of the most, vital spaces in someone's career, because it's kind of the space where, you know, you're going to sink or swim. It determines whether you're going to be a top 50, top habits and you know, your professionalism.
Yeah.
You're making a huge step.
Because the players that you work with, I take it you work with more than just one, it's a few. I've got here Robin Montgomery, who recently just won the
Yeah, Games. So I spent a short time with Robin Montgomery, okay. But I will say that, you know, working with Robin Montgomery, I would just admire just her, like, competitive spirit. I mean, she obviously kills the ball, but, you know, she's just a killer, you know?
Yeah.
Claire V, I work with her as well. She spent half her time, you know, at USTA and the other half her time at Patrick's over at the Premier. So, yeah, just I think I'm really impressed by, you know, just her positivity. And then I would also say just her professionalism as well, just at such a young age.
Yeah, and this year also was the year of the Olympics. And you were part of the tennis or Team USA. If you can talk a bit about that experience, like how was that kind of being out there in Tokyo, you know, with Team USA, basically Francis Tiafoe and, you know, among others. But yeah, if you can talk a bit about your Olympic experience.
I mean, that was, for me, that was my first Olympics. So I thought it was unreal, crazy experience. Tokyo was really hot. To start off, it was like super hot. But I will say at the tennis venue, it felt like it was just another stop, to be honest. But I thought it was very eye-opening when we went to the village and you saw, you know, all of the other countries. And I mean, that was really the real experience for me, just seeing, you know, just so many, like, I mean, different countries and like tall people. And I was like, whoa, like, yeah, but it was crazy. It was unreal. I mean,
were you able to like mix with the other athletes as well? Or not so much because of COVID.
Not so much. I think we stayed with basketball. So I saw Kevin Durant on the elevator. Basketball and women's soccer. Men and women's basketball and women's soccer. So that was pretty cool just seeing some of the other
athletes. Fantastic.
Draymond Green as well. He was working out in the gym. So yeah, just met a lot of cool people.
Nice. And then just lastly on you. So would you like say you have maybe aspirations to maybe get back on the tour to become a coach, or are you kind of happy kind of with your role at the moment, like at the USTA? Or yeah, can you see yourself maybe coaching one day, like fully on the tour?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I think I'm in a pretty good spot just because of the balance, the work-life balance right now. I wouldn't say that I don't have, you know, any aspirations, or I would never say never, but I think working at USTA has allowed me to spend time with my family and have a work-life balance, but still do what I'm passionate about doing, which is, you know, developing, you know, young people and walking them through that transition from juniors to pro.
Fantastic. And now over to you, Jameer. Do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So how did the opportunity to work with Serena come about?
Jay hit me up one day and asked me if I wanted to, if I was interested in working with Serena. And I thought he was kidding at first, but obviously I said yes. And I was actually working in Puerto Rico at the time, coaching a kid out there. And around that time, they had two like disastrous hurricanes hit.
So Jameer, to cut you off, but like just to lead into this story, you know, Venus, she's pretty like low-key and quiet, you know, so if she asks you a question, then like you got to hold some weight to it, you know. And you're like, okay, like what was the reason behind that? So I just noticed like within a 2-week span she would ask me like, hey, what's your brother doing, you know? Hey, like when did you care so much about my brother? You know, so, hey, you know, he's working in, you know, Puerto Rico with the kid. And Jameer, I'll let you take it from here.
Right. And so the hurricanes hit, I relocate back to New York, and the kid who I'm working with obviously didn't need me in the same capacity that he needed me in Puerto Rico with. Like they brought me down there to be like a personal coach because his coach in New York couldn't come to Puerto Rico. So they didn't need me in the same capacity. And around that time, Jay hits me up, sends me the text message, and things start moving super fast once I say yes. Jay texts me. I text Jay back, yes. Next thing I know, like within 24 hours, I get a message from Patrick to come over to Nice to train at the academy, to, I guess, to do a trial run. And actually, when I go to Nice, I'm working out with Coco during that time.
Wow.
During that like week span time. So I'm having practices with her and Kere, and I do that for like a week. And then when I get back, I get a text from Serena, you know, saying that, you know, she's interested in starting back up and she wants to kind of do a trial run with me. And so this is, she had just had the kid. Actually in the HBO Being Serena, that was our first time hitting. And so it was just like the cameras were out. And the crazy story is we're hitting down the middle. The camera was literally 3 feet away from her. And I didn't, I like, I'm just like, is that normal for someone like for a hitting partner to be that precise? Cause I had to put it, not only put it in her hitting zone, but try not to hit the cameraman. So and then on top of that, that was our first practice together. So not only am I like super nervous, but I'm just like, you know, I've never been this accurate on, even when I was playing on the court. So that's how it came about. And, you know, Serena gets back on the court and starts practicing, and we develop a good chemistry working relationship, and one thing leads to another, and here we are 4 years later.
Love that. I, before we move on to the next question, I just love how like it's kind of kept in the family. Like I love how like, yeah, it was Venus that asked the question of what's your brother doing, and then obviously Jermaine,
go again.
No, I just think, you know, me coming in and having that, you know, posture of working with Venus for 3 years, you know, just gaining that respect. I mean, I feel like Jameer had the job before he had the job, you know, so he just had to really show up. And, you know, I knew he was going to do a good job. I knew he was going to kill it. You know, took some getting used to, but, you know, now I think he's found his cadence. And yeah, I'm proud.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, my first tournament with Serena was at Miami. And I did an awful job. I mean, I was, not only was I like out of shape, I was nervous, I was missing. Serena's dad came on the court one time and I almost hit him with the serve. When I tell you, it was just, I felt so bad because, I mean, here's someone who I've grown up watching tennis my whole career. And I want to do the best job for her and so that she has the best opportunity to go out there and win. So I did an awful job. She had an awful tournament. I thought I was going to be fired. But, you know, I stuck in there and I feel more comfortable. I've never felt comfortable on the court with her, but I feel more comfortable than I did back then.
Fascinating.
I mean, you can kind of see that you guys do have like a nice relationship altogether, even though we're only seeing it through the social media posts and everything.
Yeah.
That you guys really have.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing about Venus and Serena. Like at the end of the day, they're like, they're dope, super, super down to earth human beings. Like, you know, above all, like they're just super grounded. You know, I've seen Venus and Serena, they're like Jermaine, you'll see, you'll be practicing with them and it'd be like this super intense pressure practice. And then all of a sudden they'll just break out, start dancing. So I mean, they're super fun to be around, both on and off the tennis court. Obviously on the tennis court, it can get intense. They're both super competitive, especially Serena, you know, at the end of the day, it's about winning. And when she steps on that tennis court, she steps into the office. So, you know.
And just talk us through like a typical day, how is it during like the tournaments, practice?
Events? Yeah, it's similar. I think, you know, the girls, they've been playing tennis for a while now. So they're pretty set in their routine. We have a morning practice for, you know, depending on what we're working on, what we're trying to get better at, what tournament we're getting ready for, determines the length of time, how healthy she is. But typical practice is 2.5 hours. Then we'll do some fitness after that. And then it's Olympia time.
And what would you say is your, well, maybe the HBO special or not, but what would you say is like your most memorable moment, your time working with?
Ooh, definitely winning that title in Auckland, the ASB Classic. Mm-hmm. Seeing Serena when she gets off the court winning, smile on her face, like super happy. Like she definitely hates losing more than she loves winning, but just to, you know, there's so much that goes into getting her ready to play for a tournament, and to have that ending result, knowing that, you know, we had a great off season that year. We put in a lot of work. We went to New Zealand early, got some great practices under some tough conditions because it was windy there. But just to be able to get that first title with her and to always have that memory with her. And I think she even did like a new tradition where she did like a cartwheel or something over the trophy. I think that's I mean, obviously there's tons of every time I hang out with Serena, that it's memorable. But, you know, that's one that I'll cherish for sure.
Before we move on to the next question, actually, Jermaine, I didn't ask you your most memorable moment with Venus. Like, what stands out for you? Like, if you can pick one, I know there must be a few.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely a few, but I would say the most memorable one would be that 2017 Wimbledon. Just because she was dealing with the accident that she had, you know, behind the scenes, and just watching her handle that week with so much grace, just through adversity, and being able just to block out, you know, everything that's happened. You know, blocking out the noise and just channeling that focus towards, you know, competing and, you know, and almost, you know, winning, crossing the finish line. She lost to Muguruza. But even more memorable for me was just, that was my first time playing on grass since I was 14 years old. And just remember the first day at Wimbledon, she was like, okay, let's play a set.
How did that turn out?
Yeah, I think I fell like after, you know, I fell about 15 times and the next day, you know.
Did you have grass court shoes?
I did have grass court shoes. So still falling. So, but no, I thought that was pretty impactful. And yeah, she almost, she lost to Muguruza in the finals. And
that's one thing about the girls. They have a great support team around them. You know, the sisters really come through for them whenever they need. You know, if anything's going on, you'll always see the sisters the first on the scene.
Yeah. And just, yeah, watching her family support her throughout that whole time, I mean, it was just like, kind of, it was amazing to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
So, Jermaine, what is it like working with Patrick? And also, is it true that you actually did coach some of the players from his academy as well?
Yeah, no, I don't coach them. If anything, you know, it's a similar situation where if they need a hitting partner or someone, you know, to work out with and train with while they're at the academy, then I'll help out. But it's not, I'm not going, you know, giving directions or training routines or anything like that. And Patrick, yeah, man, I've never met someone who loves tennis as much as Patrick. This guy will be at the tennis court from 6 a.m. and leave at 1 a.m. and do it for 2 weeks straight. The guy loves to talk about, he eats, sleeps, and breathes tennis. I mean, you see his page.
Yeah.
And that's all genuine. It's coming from a genuine place. The guy loves it. And so, I mean, just being, you know, having him around these 4 years, I've learned a lot. Just, you know, what to look for and players, you know, how to prove. Like, he's really good from a tennis aspect, but also from a psychological aspect, getting the best from the players. A cool thing to see with Patrick and Serena's relationship is a lot of times when she goes out on the court, she literally only has to focus on the tennis. Like, he takes care of everything. So, hey, .. you do this, do this, do this. And most of the time, you know, she executes it well. So they have a really good working relationship, and that's cool to see how to get the best out of your player. And he does that with all the players.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. And where do you see yourself in 10 years? And is it going to be like a field you're working? It's going to be one player or like your older brother or where do you see it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm working on I got my hand in a lot of things right now. So I don't necessarily know if tennis will be at the forefront 10, 15, 20 years from now. But it's definitely always going to be a part of, you know, my identity. And so, I mean, to answer your question, I'm not sure.
Fair enough. It's absolutely fair enough. Yeah, guys, kind of coming towards the end now, but I want to talk a bit about like visual representation, and we kind of did touch upon it in terms of the black experience in tennis. So obviously we all know tennis has always been pretty much a predominantly white sport, and pretty much remains so like to this point. So that's why for us as well, like this is a big deal, like talking to you both, because you know, you're huge figureheads. Like I think you said you're like leading lights in the pro game, just, you know, having worked with the players you've worked with and, you know, the roles you both have. So if you can like maybe speak about like, are you guys conscious of that? Like in terms of the fact that you are like, you know, two very few like black figures at the top of like professional tennis.
I guess I'll take that first. I think one thing I will say, you know, for me, I think that, you know, when you look at the women's side, you know, we grew up watching Venus and Serena dominating, you know, and like, you know, I grew up thinking like, okay, I want to hit a backhand like Venus, you know, and I want that, you know, just that competitive spirit, just that one look that they give you. So I would say they've been our heroes and they made the sport like, and if you look at the women's side, it's not an anomaly, it's become like more normal and they keep coming on Steven, like they're coming and coming. But I do think on the men's side, you know, we have like Francis, and if we do go like, you know, I guess we Monfils and Sanga in France, I don't see as much representation there. And I don't know, like, I don't know if we're going to see a change in that just because of, you know, the investment of tennis, you know, like you invest in like, you know, a basketball or you play on the basketball team, there's a pretty fast transition from college to pros, you know, you're signing a $1 million contract. Whereas you can put like so much money in tennis and you won't reap the benefits unless you just have a large bank account and you keep going. But I don't like, for me, it always felt like on the men's side of things that there were kind of like a lack there. And I don't, you know, I don't really see if I had a hero outside of, you know, like Arthur Ashe or those guys, I don't see that representation. So I never really felt like, I mean, it's pretty loud, you know, whereas,
I think Jay, I think you went ahead to the next one, the last one.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I thought it parlayed into, you know, just that representation.
Yeah, it does. It does for sure. I think for me, growing up playing, there wasn't many people that looked like us. So I was conscious of it, but in a way that I didn't feel like I necessarily belong. Like, you know, when we go to the tournaments, you know, there would be like 1, 2, 3, 4 of us, and we would always hang around each other. So it would just be like a clique. So I was just like, you know, it never felt like I belonged to the overall, you know, the system. But now I'm in a completely different space to where I feel like I have to, you know, kind of represent in a different way than I did when I was playing. When I was playing, I didn't feel like I belonged. Like now I feel like we're in a position to where we have to, you know, I don't want anybody else to feel that way. You know, if somebody else is coming up and playing a tournament, or if I can do something and reach out to a player to make them feel more comfortable to like say, hey, like, you know, if this is what you really want to do, let's chase this all the way. So I'm definitely more conscious of it now than when I was playing.
No, I love both of those answers. But again, Jermaine, you kind of did touch on it, like in terms of the significance, like, I mean, we've had, you said, we've got in the men's game anyway, it's Felix Auger-Aliassime. He's like basically top 10. Francis, he's up there as well. Obviously, we've had Monfils, Sanga. But yeah, there aren't many black guys coming through. Like in looking at specifically from an American point of view, like what do you think kind of needs to be done or could be done to, yeah, maybe have more of an influx of, you know, young black
guys. But there's a reason for this though, because it's also kind of layered. Like if you look from when we were growing up, the first layer is, you know, the representation. Like there have been way more African-American women that have been on the scene at the top level, especially like Venus and Serena, clear examples, whereas you don't see that on the men's side, for one. And then also, like Jay was saying, the investment, like from an American perspective, if you're, parents do their homework. So if I'm a dad and I have a son that wants to play tennis, if you're looking down the road, there's only 4 scholarships available for him if you want to go to school, or if the goal is to get a scholarship and play. Whereas on the women's side, there's 8 scholarships available. Yeah. So you know if you want your daughter to play tennis, there's going to be a significant more of a chance for her to get a scholarship than on the men's side. Not to mention, you're gonna naturally gravitate to sports that, football, for example, they have 60 scholarships, whereas on the men's side they have 4. And so just going back to the question, I feel like too you have to define that success too, because just because you're seeing the men on and the women on a higher scale, there are more women or more Black women that get into tennis than there are Black men that play. So with that being said, there are also still success stories. Like, we have tons of, our bros that play growing up, Damon, Anthony, Jared, I could keep naming names of, our Black friends that grew up playing tennis, got a full scholarship. They just never played at the highest level, So I think that we're only counting at the top level. There's still, just because we're not seeing it doesn't mean it's not there.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
One thing I'll add to what Jameer said as well is, I think we have to keep in mind that, tennis is a year-round sport, So, and if you're really doing well at tennis, there's really not an off season because you got the end of the year championships. And I think you get like maybe a month and a half to kind of rest and recover. Whereas if you play, other sports, example is like the Colin Kaepernick. I don't know if you guys seen that documentary, but like if he didn't make football, like he was like going to be a top draft in the MLB, And so you get to play other sports which are seasonal, like baseball, football, basketball. So you could be a multi athlete, Whereas in tennis, you kind of have to put all your eggs in one basket,
Right.
So, when you really think about it.
Yeah. So to go back to the question, I actually think for as many guys that play, but like I think it's kind of even. Like I think you're supposed to see more women getting involved because there are more opportunities there. So, I think the fact that we do have Felix, Sanga, Gail, Francis, who else am I missing?
Mikael.
I think there's a smaller pool of Blacks that get into tennis than there are, the on the women's side.
I think that's a good point you make in terms of what's already there. Like we already do have a substantial amount in the women's game. Yeah. You're going to see more coming through, whereas on the men, it's going to take a bit longer.
Guys, if you can just basically maybe give us a bit of an insight, into some Black up and coming players, like you guys are kind of keeping tracks of or keeping tabs on, like if there are any, maybe Jameer, you can go first.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, without a doubt, Francis and Chris Eubanks. I think Chris, we grew up with. I've known Chris since he was like maybe 11, 12 years old. He's one of my groomsmen at my wedding coming up in 8 days. So yeah, man, he's shown tremendous improvement over the last couple of years and super exciting to watch. I'm really looking forward to, him coming out and having a successful career.
Am I right in saying that you were at the US Open, the clash between him and Francis? What did you make
of it? That was a fun match. Chris was seeing the ball well too. He was seeing it big. He was serving well, and Francis had the crowd going, hitting those shots. That was a really cool experience to be a part of. Thanks. Shout out to Chris for letting me be a part of the team and watching that match, and going to New York and helping them out.
Nice.
That was a very cool experience.
And Jermaine, yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think just to echo what Jameer just said, I mean, you know, definitely Francis TFO, you know, he's on the come up. I mean, he's trying to become a household name. So that's my guy. And then, of course, Chris Eubanks, who we've grown up with and fellow Westlake alumni, ATLian. Yeah. So, definitely Chris Eubanks, really excited. Looking forward to just seeing him do great things, you know, and just going to definitely following his career and, you know, a really good friend. So both of those guys are my guys.
Well, just quickly before we end, what about some girls, like, or yeah, some like maybe juniors? Because again, Jermaine, I saw you at the French Open. I think you were with Robin Montgomery during her run.
Yeah. So definitely Robin Montgomery. I would say Claire V. I mean, there's a lot coming, but those two right now are the two that I have in mind that are, you know, some of our up and coming females, so female players.
Perfect.
Trying to think if I could think of anyone else. Yeah, sorry if I'm leaving anybody out, but those two are the two standouts.
There's a girl from Atlanta, actually. I want to say Alicia is her name.
Oh, Alicia. You guys know who I'm talking about? Alicia Parks.
Yeah, I've never seen her before, but I keep seeing her name, and like everyone's telling me she's one to watch. I can't wait to see her play. I'm definitely seeing her name a lot.
Just from a personal perspective, like I hope we're not waiting too long, like to see like an influx, because I think. Yeah, the game needs us. Like I've said this pretty much, like quite bluntly, in the past. Like we add so much to the sport, and I think it.
But that's the crazy thing about it is if you have someone like us who's super athletic, super talented, they're probably not gonna play tennis just because, you know, a 6'4" African American man who's super athletic. Well, just from a financial perspective, you're probably not going to play tennis. You're going to navigate to other highlighted sports. Like if you're seeing guys on TV sign for $40-50 million contracts, and then you see what's going on in tennis, especially when the whole pandemic hit, you know, the pay was significantly cut. Whereas you see the NBA is still going on in the bubble, still signing major contracts. And so it's just, you know,
goes back to my point, right? Like, I don't think you have to pay anything like to go to the combine, you know, like, and, you know, go to the combine, you do that. And like, that's kind of like a measurement of, you know, what you can do. Whereas, you know, you could come out of college in tennis and you can be out on the tour for 4 or 5 years, investing with the hopes, you know, like, I don't think anybody's wants to really chance that, you know, that's not like,
it's also sad too, because the percentage of people who make it at that level in the NFL and the NBA is less than 1% of people on the planet. So I'm just like, you know, you have a better chance of growing up trying to get, you're going to have a better chance of getting that a scholarship than going to the NBA or NFL. But if you see it all the time when you turn on the TV, then it's going to, you know, you're going to see more of that, you know. But then that's what I said going back, like we have to define what success is. Mm-hmm.
That's a great point. I to just kind of close, like, congratulations as well, Jermaine. Obviously, your newborn.
Thank you.
Born recently. Would you kind of push your kids into tennis, knowing, you know, kind of all you know, and you've pretty much been in it all your life? Like, would you maybe tell them to steer clear?
Yeah, when Jaden was born, he had a baseball bat in his hand.
Oh, wow. Okay. MLB awaits.
No, I mean, we always, you know, my wife and I, we always make this joke in our household, but, you know, we're like, hey, he'll cross train with tennis and that will get him ready for baseball, you know. But ultimately, you know, I'm going to expose him and to, you know, all of the sports and whatever he chooses to do, you know.
Oh, fantastic. And Jameer as well, congratulations on recently becoming engaged as well.
Yeah, thank you. Wedding's in 8 days.
Oh, wow. Wow. I mean, all the more reason for us to thank you as well, because you should be kind of focusing on planning for your wedding. But how are your partners kind of, I take it they must be tennis fans as well. you know, knowing.
Yeah, no, Jordan, she played D1 at Temple University, oh, and wow. Natalie played D1 at University of Georgia. So, yeah,
Bulldogs, we've got a divided household here, me going to Clemson. But yeah, she traveled as well. She was a Pan American and she played at UGA. And so she gets it. She understands the travel and the sacrifice.
And most of the time, Jordan, I mean, most of the time, Natalie as well, they're able to travel with us. So
yeah, that's right.
It's worked out well.
Fantastic.
Yeah, very fortunate situations.
Guys, that's literally all we have. Like, so again, massive, massive thank you, man. Like, really, really appreciate it. So yeah, Lucy, we've just finished probably the biggest.
We didn't just finish. We were screaming and shouting for like 10 minutes.
No, it's a big moment, man. But again,
very big.
Like, just I'm still in shock.
I can't believe it, Igor.
It's wild. Like,
I can't believe it, Igor.
The Jenkins brothers, like,
this is a huge. Do you know what's so crazy? I don't think they realize how much is a big
100%. Deal. 100%. And like, I not to cut you, I'm sorry, but like, the way that they are so humble, like they're thanking us for the opportunity. I'm like, what? What are you thanking us for? Like, what? Like, you guys have got this confused.
Bam! One of you's getting married soon. Yeah, you're taking your time, too, like talking
eight
to
days
us.
Days away from his wedding day, like
what?
Taking time out of like their busy schedules. Crazy. Obviously, we know it's the off season, but still,
100%. Yeah.
And before we started, they were like, "Oh, listen, you guys have us. Like, we're not doing anything. Like, basically, yeah, we're free. Yeah. So however long you need, just take your time." Like, Lucy, I'm in shock. I don't know what to say.
No, honestly, like I said, like, I don't think, like, they realised how much it was, like, a big deal, like, to us. And, like, you know, this is everything right now. Like, this is us, two black, you know, tennis fans, interviewing two important black brothers in tennis. And we're giving it back to our black tennis fans. Do you get what I mean? Like, it's very, like, some people might just be a little small something, but this is big, man. Yeah. This is a beautiful way to close the season for us and
it's mad. Like I said to you as well, like, it's literally, well, tomorrow, it's a year to the day we interviewed Francis Tiafoe.
Yeah, and that was a,
like,
big one
in
as
the
well.
Same studio. Like, it's just wild. So yeah, man, like, it's just the thing where we're just going to continue to elevate.
We're
going, like,
to do what we got to do.
I am very, very grateful, like, to you as well, Lucy, honestly. Like, just because, this isn't easy doing this. And like, I couldn't imagine doing this, like, on my own. So the fact that I've got you to kind of, like, bounce off and, like, help me along the way, like, it's
yeah,
a big
guys
deal.
you see how like a year ago, I don't know if you guys remember this, on our Instagram story, when I was literally like, oh, you know, we're setting up, and I'm like, how I set up is me chilling, eating the sweets, and Eugene doing everything. Let me just say, today, yeah, if Eugene did not have me, I don't know what he would have done. So I'm taking the flowers today, because, you know, I did a lot in terms of the tech, you know, even during the interview and stuff. I did wish I spoke a little bit more, but I was just very nervous.
Nah, you were good.
I even forgot to mention, I'm so upset that I forgot to mention this, but my first time I went Wimbledon, I actually did walk past Jameer and stuff, and I forgot to say to him, like, he was just right next to me, and I was so hesitant and scared to actually, like, ask him, like, for a picture or something. And now that I'm speaking to him, I'm thinking, like, right, like, this guy is so fucking nice. He would have probably even done a whole photo shoot with me, like, who knows. But it's so, but it's crazy how I went from being terrified to speak to him just for a picture to now actually having full-on conversation and
hella relaxed.
So thank you for bringing me on, because you know, I mean, if you didn't ask me again to jump on Black Spring Global podcast, I would have been like, nah, I can't do this. But we've done it. This is our second year,
mad. It's a brilliant way to close as well, like, so, man, I can't really, yeah,
I don't think, you know what, we had our episode where we closed the show, I think it's a good time for us to reflect.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
because first of all, we started this podcast when literally the panoramic happened.
Just before,
literally. Mm. So we barely had any tournaments. Mm. And now look.
And we pushed through.
We pushed through. Mm.
you know, we were in lockdown. You know, it was, first of all, mentally, you know, alone, lockdown was hard.
Yeah.
Being tennis fans were hard, you know, just trying to keep up with content. And now fast forward, we've interviewed all of these great people and we then, have all
and
of
then our
these
first full like season as well.
Yeah,
like,
first full season. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because before it was just Higgy Haga. And yeah, man, but I'm really proud of us.
We are gonna like switch things up as well, like next year. Like,
yes, guys.
So stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
More will be revealed, obviously, like next year. But like, yeah, we're gonna be doing things a bit different.
A bit different.
But yeah, still coming with the content, like obviously. And yeah, you just, you know, you'll see it all on the timeline, like on the social media platforms, and we're basically looking to incorporate more visual content, basically. Yep. So
making it engaging,
it's important.
You know,
and obviously, yeah, again, guys, thank you so much as well, like all the listeners and like the followers on social media as well. Like it's a big thing, so yeah, we appreciate you
100%. You guys contributing to this shit as well,
massively,
man. This is all of us,
massively.
Nobody wins when the family feud.
and on that note, again, man, massive shout out to the Jenkin brothers.
Thank you so much for your time.
And yeah, man, we look forward to just continuing to watch you guys, you know, elevate and just, yeah, man, be the leading examples that you both are, like in pro tennis. So yeah, man, we look forward to next year. And yeah, guys, I think that's,
yeah, have a Merry Christmas. If you don't celebrate Christmas, have a nice holiday or December or winter, and Happy New Year to everyone. And you know, by the grace of God, we'll make it through. You know, no pandemic gonna stop us. You know,
variants.
No variants, none of this. You know, I know I'm starting to sound like them Nigerian aunties in WhatsApp, you know, voice notes praying and stuff. But you know, we gotta keep it good vibes. Indeed. But let's close well, and we'll see you guys soon with a new season at the Australian Open.
All the best, guys. Happy New Year.